Gopi Janabalaba Kidivada Dadi Gopi Janabalaba Gopi Janabalaba Kidivada Dadi Yashoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Calling out. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Calling out. Gaur Premanandi Hari Haribo. class in 30 minutes? Is that what we have? Yeah. Okay. I want to ask Archie. On Sunday, I asked him how much time. He said time is eternal, and it went on for 3.5 hours. So I'm not going to ask him. You hear that? See, that's what's supposed to happen. You hear that? Okay, what do we have here? There's a problem with the cooling fan. Okay, well. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. See, I was told we're in Canto 3, Chapter 8. I think it's Chapter 8, and then Verse 30, I think it was. Let's see here. Oh, it's right here. Okay, well, since that's not up, I'll just... Characharo ko Bhagavan Mahidram Ahindra Bandhum Salila Pagad Bhagudham. I should have my reading glasses here. Kirita Sahasra Hiranyasringan Avir Bhavat Kaustubarat Nagarbham. Okay, so you're very close to the end of this chapter, so I'll just read the few verses that remain. Translation: like a great mountain, the Lord stands as the abode for all moving and non-moving living entities. He is the friend of the snakes because Lord Ananta is his friend. As a mountain has thousands of golden peaks, so the Lord was seen with thousands of golden helmeted hoods of Anantanaga. And as a mountain is sometimes filled with jewels, so also his transcendental body was fully decorated with valuable jewels. As a mountain is sometimes submerged in the ocean water, so the Lord is sometimes submerged in the water of devastation. We don't need that. There are no purports, by the way, practically, for the rest of these verses. So I'll just read. Lord Brahma, thus looking upon the Lord in the shape of a mountain, concluded that he was Hari, the personality of Godhead. He saw that the garland of flowers on his chest glorified him with Vedic wisdom in sweet songs and looked very beautiful. He was protected by the Sudarshan wheel for fighting, and even the sun, moon, air, fire, etc., could not have access to him. When the Lord Brahma, the maker of the universal destination, thus saw the Lord, he simultaneously glanced over creation. Lord Brahma saw the lake in Lord Vishnu's navel, and the lotus flower, as well as the devastating water, the drying air, and the sky, all became visible to him. And finally, the last verse of the chapter. Lord Brahma, thus being surcharged with the mode of passion, Rajasa Guna, became inclined to create, and after seeing the five causes of creation indicated by the personality of Godhead, he began to offer his respectful prayers on the path of the creative mentality. Yes, on the path of the creative mentality. Very interesting phrase. Very short purport Prabhupada offers us. Even if one is in the material mode of passion, to create something in the world, he has to take shelter of the Supreme for the necessary energy. That is the path of the successful termination of any attempt. Such a short purport, but it is loaded. To create something in the world, he has to take shelter of the Supreme for the necessary energy. Now, we have an artist here who paints, but she knows who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. But lots of people paint. Famous artists, Van Gogh. Everyone says Van Gogh, but it's actually Van Gogh. Rembrandt, Giotto, so many artists in the West, they paint. I'm getting some sign language here, which I don't know. Like this? Oh, loud. That's so loud. I don't like to hear my own voice. Okay, if you insist, Archita. So, Johann Sebastian Bach, however, said there can be no true music without the grace of God. And he was one of the greatest in the West. There's whether one knows God, whether one knows God's grace, every creator, every artist, every poet depends on the supreme energy of the Lord. Necessary energy, Prabhupada says. So I have to ask, why are we, you know, reading about the cosmic creation, especially during Damodar? What does that have to do with anything? Well, the last verse we just sung, O Lord, the entire universe was created by Lord Brahma, who was born from your abdomen, which was bound with a rope by Mother Yashoda. Now look how there is the juxtaposition of the Aishwarya and the Madhurya. Look at that. There is a relationship between the incomprehensible creation in which we find ourselves and the intimate connection with the Lord. What is that creation? I came a little prepared, despite the fact that I was at Loyola Marymount University last night, quite late, giving a lecture on the bhakti inherent in the Yoga Sutra, which no one really has ever brought out before. But actually, I need to correct myself. Prabhupada speaks about the Yoga Sutra in the Bhagavad Gita, some key verses, or aphorisms, actually. It's amazing. But he gives us just a little seed, and I'm like trying to grow this plant of the Yoga Sutra's bhakti. That will be coming out with Yale University Press whenever I happen to get it done. It's going to take a while. Listen to what's stated in the Bhakti Sutra regarding this question of the Aishwarya and the Madhurya. The appreciation of who Krishna is cosmologically, cosmogenically. Why should we be concerned about that? Well, of course, we have this example that same Lord who created all the heavens and the earth and all the whole cosmic manifestation was tied up by Mother Yashoda. Okay, now how amazing is that? There are a few aphorisms in the Bhakti Sutra which asks this question. There is especially among all the examples of bhakti the extraordinary instance of the cowherd maidens who reside in Vraja. They are the Vraja Gopikas. There, even with regard to the exalted state of their beloved, in other words, the Aishwarya, the Vraja Gopikas' knowledge of it may not have been remembered. In this, there is no contradiction. In other words, how is it that the gopis don't really know who Krishna is? Being entirely without this knowledge of their beloved's exalted state, the Vrajagopikas would be like ordinary paramours. In other words, what's that? No, Bhakti Sutra. Yeah. Yeah. No, Yoga Sutra doesn't get this good. Yeah. But it gets good in its own way. So this is the Bhakti Sutra. Sorry, didn't make that clear. So the concern is, how can the gopis, the Vrajagopikas, forget about the Lord's magnificent powers and energies and cosmogenic powers? But the Bhakti Sutra insists that they never forgot it, but they may not recall it in certain instances. I'm going to solve this problem for all of you, okay? So you don't have to go away wondering, what is Garuda talking about here, okay? I'm really going to work on this for you, okay? The next text says, there is certainly no happiness for a lover who is without the knowledge of the state of happiness of the beloved. Now, this is an extraordinary statement. This is what we're all about. We are engaged in a process of being transferred from an intrinsically egocentric orientation to life to a divine orientation to life. We are purifying ourselves so we can appreciate the divine intimately and in all of his extraordinary manifestations. And surely this chapter is doing just that. We are here to appreciate something of the cosmic manifestation. So it's not that the Vrajagopikas did not know how great Krishna was, but they forget it when Krishna is in his presence. But when Krishna is absent from them, they remember the Aishwarya. There's the key. The Aishwarya is part of the viraha, is the feeling of separation from Krishna. The Bhagavatam here, before we get to the Dashamaskanda, is trying to cultivate in us a sense of the absence of our dearest Krishna and his beloved consort Radha. Especially in this world, you know. And I just happen to have my translation of the Rasapanchadayi, in which the Vrajagopikas, when they are with Krishna, they don't invoke the magnificent cosmology, the cosmogony. But in the Gopi Gita, the famous middle chapter of the Rasapanchadayi, when Krishna is absent from the gopis, they remember Krishna's magnificent creative potency. One verse says, your lotus feet fulfill the desires of all who humbly submit to them. Worshipped by the one born from the lotus flower, they are the ornament of the earth. So you see, Lord Brahma comes up even in the prayers of the Vrajagopikas to Krishna, who is absent. They are to be meditated upon during times of distress, for they grant the highest satisfaction. Govinda. Govinda. Yes, very good. During the day, when you go off to the forest, we cannot see you. The smallest fraction of a moment seems like a thousand years, thousands of years. When we eagerly behold again your beautiful face with curling locks of hair, it seems the Creator was mindless, making eyelids to cover our eyes. So first they're appreciating Lord Brahma, and now they're practically cursing him for creating eyelids. That nanosecond of, like, that's interrupting my vision of the most supremely beautiful divine object ever, right? But that's interesting because in the next chapter, the Vrajagopikas are all sitting around Krishna. He returns. And one of the gopis uses her eyelids and closes them. Now, why would she do that? Any ideas? Why would, around the gopis, Krishna's right there. And just after cursing the Creator for creating eyelids that disrupt the continuous vision on their divine beloved. In the next chapter, there's one gopi who has it in her mind to just close her eyes. Why? Any ideas? Yeah? Yes. Yes, that's right. She's feeling Krishna's presence more with her eyes closed. How? Okay, so she's in some sense utilizing viraha for greater closeness. So vipralamba, which means, ironically, the attainment of distance. So sambhoga is precipitated by vipralamba seva. But she does so, she goes inside and meditates on Krishna in the heart and embraces him there. Why? Because all the other gopis were around and she didn't want to share him. So she embraces him within her heart. So this was, I think, utilizing the Creator's arrangement of the eyelids. She could feel Krishna's presence more within her heart than even when he was sitting in front. But while, and this is my point, my main point is, that while Krishna is absent, we contemplate Krishna's magnificence. And that's what this chapter is about. If you wonder how magnificence is, I've done some mathematics for all of you. Okay, Andrew DeCarmagee is here, and he can correct me on any of my calculations. If I'm wrong, just don't let me know. Okay, I want to, since the exercise here is to feel Krishna's absence and his magnificence and his Aishwarya, so as to create a greater desire for his presence, I'm trying to do this for all of you, okay? This is my last day here, and I'm trying to serve all of you, okay? So give me a chance, okay? 1 second, okay. The smallest unit of time in the cosmic life of Brahma. Here's how units of time in Brahma's world covers such huge spans of time in our world. Okay. So this is an attempt to help all of us feel extremely small and insignificant. Okay? So you ready for this exercise in humility? I know none of you really need it. Actually, I need it. Okay, so I'm doing this for myself. 1 second in Brahma's cosmic world equals 100,000 human years. I mean, we could stop there if you want, but I've got much more. Yeah, I've been tracking this. 1 minute of Brahma's cosmic day equals 6 million human years. Okay, are you people like good with numbers? I mean, if you're not, too bad. 1 hour of Brahma's cosmic day equals 360 million human years. So, Vasan, you thought you had time management problems, right? I mean, no wonder you do. You don't have Brahma's lifespan. All of us would get a lot more done, I think, if we... One full day, which includes day and night of Brahma, 24, his 24 hours in Brahma's cosmic life equals, it's getting tough, 8,640,000,000 human years. That's one day. I've got more. 1 year, 360 days in Brahma's cosmic life equals, see if I can read this number, 3,110,400,000,000 human years. May I have a little applause for this? Just a little one? Okay, that's enough. That's it. That's all I want. Just a little applause. That's all. I don't need a lot of appreciation for this. I'm just not a mathematician. But I'm not done yet. 100 years of Brahma's cosmic life, which is his total lifespan, equals, oh wow, let's see, 311,040,000,000,000 human years. I don't know about you, but I'm getting kind of dizzy. A lifetime of Brahma is the duration of the universe. Its initial birth and its eventual annihilation. Brahma lives 100 cosmic years. Now, each one of the 1,000 cycles in Brahma's life contains the 4 yugas, one kalpa. And you know, we have a Krita Yuga or Satya Yuga, 1,728,000. Anyway, look, okay, here's the point. We're extremely small. We have a very, very, very short lifetime. I'm pushing 100 years old. I mean, look at me. I'm old and decrepit. And, you know, I have to ask, like, I've got to, you know, my bhajan and seva, it's got to be, you know, stepped up. We have to be able to leave this world in this tiny, 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 tiny life that we've been living with the satisfaction that we really put out in our seva for Krishna, the mission for Prabhupada. This is what we're here to do. Now, just a few words, and then I'll open up for discussion. We're not going to go 3.5 hours that I did on Sunday. Earlier in this chapter, Brahma is said to have looked around in the cosmic space. He looked around a lot, so much so that he developed 4 heads. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I could use an extra head. But we don't have an extra head. But he developed 4 heads to look around. And he was kind of like freaked out to the point where he said, I'm just going to sit and I'm going to meditate. Brahma's the first yogi. I'm not sure most yogis even know that. At least modern yogis. They don't know that. Brahma sat and meditated. He went into a state of samadhi. This, of course, needs to be mentioned in a Yoga Sutra that is seen with the Bhakti Vilochana, the eye of Bhakti. Brahma meditated, and what did he come out with? Right? You've all read this, right? The Brahma Samhita. And if any of you have read, of course all of you have read, the Brahma Samhita, it is some of the most beautiful, extraordinary poetry. It's beautiful. Now, this is what happens when you come out of samadhi. I want some of that. Especially since I do write and I could really use the help. So, but we have that meditation in the Maha Mantra. We have that meditation. The Maha Mantra is the most amazing mantra because there is no, first of all, there's no other mantra like it. Most mantras are either singular bija utterances with no linguistic value, but only spiritual sonic value, like the Omkar, right? Which is actually pronounced Om, okay? When you really pronounce it. But we do it quickly in a kind of invocational fashion. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, right? That's fine. But that's a syntactical unit. It's a sentence, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya in Sanskrit. It's inflected words. Other mantras are, you know, syntactical units. The Maha Mantra has no syntax. It's not a sentence. And it's not mere utterance of divine sounds. It's the divine names of the supreme feminine and supreme masculine divinity. And not only that, it has a repetitive pattern. And its repetitive pattern is circuitous. That actually, have you noticed that when you're chanting, it's hard. Sometimes I don't realize when one mantra begins and one mantra ends, except by the fact that there are two names for Krishna and one name for Radha. These names are in the vocative case in Sanskrit. There are eight cases in Sanskrit. Krishna, Krishnaha, is the nominative case. There's a subject. Krishnam, which you've heard probably many times in the Bhagavatam, that's the object. Krishna's the object. Krishnena means with Krishna or through Krishna. Krishnaya, for Krishna. Krishnat, from Krishna. Krishnasya, of Krishna, Krishne, in Krishna. The vocative case, Krishna, O Krishna. It is calling out to Krishna. Hare is calling out to Radha from Hara. When Mahaprabhu chanted Hare, it was conveniently ambiguous because the vocative case in the masculine gender is the same in the feminine gender. So as when he felt the bhava, mahabhava, Radha, he was not calling out to himself. He was calling out to Hari. So Hare turns into Hari. But for us, Hare is for Hara. So that works out pretty conveniently, doesn't it? So the Maha Mantra is a series of names of the divine with which we call out to Radha and Krishna. And what you are calling out for is completely personal. The mantra is universal. It can be chanted anytime, anywhere, by anyone. And most mantras are particular. There's a lot of specificity involved. Gayatri Mantra, and only at sunrise, sandhya, and then midday sun. It's really not supposed to be chanted any other time. I know in the popular yoga world they're chanting and so on. That's fine, whatever. Only the Brahma Gayatri. But the Maha Mantra is perfect for us. Prabhupada came and brought it to us to show us how we can begin to hear Krishna's and Radha's love call as they are very palpably doing right here in the deities of Rukmini Dwarkadish. Why is Krishna playing the flute when he's in the presence of his supremely beloved Radha? Normally, he would never be playing the flute. So the reason he plays the flute is to make sure she is around. But they are both facing us. This is the outward gaze of divinity to call us to their divine hearts. We are so fortunate that Prabhupada told us how we can return that love call with the Maha Mantra. How about that? It's a beautiful process. I think that's why we're still here. So of us, isn't that right? I mean, you and I have known each other way too long. I mean, not long enough, of course. But we're still here because Prabhupada gave us a process that we just love. And it's so important that each of us practice, of course, the regular sadhana practices, but make sure that you always connect with a part of the process that you especially love, that reliably can always lift you up. Maybe it's a passage in Krishna book. Maybe it's a chapter in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Maybe it's a particular bhajan. Maybe it's a particular art form. Whatever it is, make sure that you stay in love with Krishna bhakti. So I think that's what this chapter is about. To make us miss our beautiful Lords, and yet to make us realize that we have such riches, such wealth right in front of us. Okay, well, I'll just stop, and perhaps some of you can correct anything that I said that was totally erroneous. So any thoughts, contributions? Yes.
Concept of boga and tamboga, separation and union, is like a blowing mind. It blows mind. The concept of which? Boga, samboga, union and separation.
Samboga and boga, samboga, same thing.
Samboga and
vipralamba.
Vipralamba.
Yes,
sorry.
Okay.
Samboga
and vipralamba. Boga and samboga. Samboga just simply means more boga.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, when you were mentioning about the blinking of the eyes and one gopi, in the next verse you say that she's blinking her eye, is to actually internalize and try to see more deeper Krishna while he's physically present right in front of her. So one thought came to my mind that the Ratha Yatra, when all the gopis went, the whole Vrindavan went to Kurukshetra, interesting to see that Krishna also is physically there. They kind of rejected him in the sense, we don't want to see you in this way. We don't want to see you in this opulent, royal. We want you back in Vrindavan. Mm. So the point that I'm bringing is that it's the same Krishna. And even Prabhupada mentions, why do you people differentiate between Krishna Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra, killing demons, and Krishna in Vrindavan? The reason I'm mentioning this is like maybe you can say something more, that still there is the sweetness and the Aishwarya are different, and every devotee wants to see him in a particular way that he feels his bhav.
Yes.
Like the case of Gopal Kumara, who was traveling to the whole universe. Maybe you can speak more about that.
Yeah, beautiful. I wish I had thought of that example, actually, because the very fact that the gopis were being rejecting of Krishna in that more Aishwarya. See, they were personally present with him. That they can only take as a Vraja, a Vraja Krishna. So even when they were personally, when Krishna was personally present, they can't relate to that. You know, it just was totally incompatible, rasa-wise. So that really demonstrates what was going on in the Gopi Gita. Now, in his absence, they may remember his wonderful, glorious Aishwarya Leelas and so on. But when he's present, they don't want anything to do with that. Look, even in human relationships, once a long time ago, I was teaching at Duke University, and my son came up to my room and said he's bored. And I said, why aren't you in school? And he said, today was a teacher meeting day. So I said, well, I'm going to school to teach. He said, well, can I come with you? You want to come see me teach? And he said, yeah. Well, okay. So I brought him down. There were about 50 kids in the class. We walked. It was a long walk on that campus. And he was sitting way in the back. And he was like a teenager. He was in high school, yeah. So he sat way in the back, and I was working with the students. I gave part lecture, then they were showing me their papers, and they finally all went out, and the classroom was empty. And I said, okay, time to go. So we're walking back to the car, and he keeps looking at me weird, you know. I said, there's something wrong? He said, I can't believe what happened back there. I'm thinking, the students are, what, they're smoking dope under the desks, or what? What did he see that I didn't see? And no, he said, no, I just can't believe what I saw. I said, what did you see? He said, all those kids think you are so smart, when I know you're really very stupid. Anyway, he could not handle that. He's never seen me. I'm just dumb at home. I'm not smart at home. I'm dumb. So even in human relationships, even my wife once, and she's heard me lecture, you know, at the Smithsonian, at this place. I gave a lecture at some church in Norfolk on Jewish mysticism, and I invoked some bhakti and brought it into the... Anyway, she said, how did you know all that? I said, what do you mean, how did I know all that? What do you think I've been doing for the last 20 years? You know, getting my degrees and so on. So, I mean, you know, personal family members don't really, you know, I'm sure that Jill Biden doesn't say, Mr. President, please pass, you know, the butter, you know. In other words, hey, Joe, you know, right? I mean, I don't know them, okay, but it just makes sense. Intimacy takes priority over formality, period, even in our relationships here. It's good. Yeah, Archie.
Thank you for a brief but sweet and deep delivery. On this question of the gopis' meditation, we know Krishna first appeared before Devaki and Vasudeva in his Aishwarya form.
Right.
Four arms, helmet.
Right.
So we could understand if they go through that, they see him in the Aishwarya form, then they think of him as the baby Krishna that left for Gokul. But when did the gopis get a chance to see Krishna in his Aishwarya form? Everybody in Vrindavan is born with, you know, baby Krishna, meditating on baby Krishna. Where did they get that from?
That's a very good question. That's part of what the Bhakti Sutra said, that ordinary paramours don't know their beloveds. But Krishna's beloveds know who he is fully. But they like to forget about the formal aspect. But how they know all that? Well, we do know that they were, you know, Vedic scholars in their past lives. Bless you, Govinda. Okay, there we go. It's a season of sneezing. That's also Kartik, yeah. So, but they were Vedic. Some, I think, even yogis. They were also perhaps also great yogis. So they had this previous knowledge. Is my only response. But otherwise, it's a really good question because, you know, when, like you said, when they went to Kurukshetra, they don't want to see all that. They don't, just like my son didn't want to see me in the university, you know, getting all this respect as the big professor, you know, and so on. I know it's hard for all of you to even see me that way. It's all right. I love you anyway. Yeah. So anyway, the idea is that, yeah, it really is interesting. But the important point is that they knew Krishna inside and out. They knew Krishna outside this Aishwarya context. And it's only when they feel separated from him and they long for him that they invoke the likes of Lord Brahma and cosmic and Aishwarya kinds of situations. Never when they're with him. I mean, you know, like when they meet with him after he disappears. So it's a, Aishwarya Bhava is something that Prabhupada wants us to meditate on. So, and the Bhagavatam wants us to meditate on. That's why it's in the third canto. And that's why we should be longing to find out eventually what's in the Dashamaskanda. And of course, this whole month is about Dashamaskanda, the month of Damodar. So, yeah. Any other comments? Or let's go here, and then we'll go there.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Prabhu, my understanding was Aishwarya Bhav is only manifest in Dwarka or Vaikuntha, and it has no place in Vraja or Vrindavan,
right?
Because Krishna's yog maya potency completely deludes everyone. So is that true even when Krishna is absent from there? Because I thought Aishwarya is only for Vaikuntha and Dwarka, at least.
I think you're correct, but that doesn't preclude the idea that the gopis know about his distracting affairs in, you know, other places. So you're right, but they're aware of it. That's the point. They know Krishna fully. They just don't want to deal with the business of God, you know, the cosmological stuff, the cosmogenic stuff. They want to deal with him intimately. Something like my son, he just wants to romp around. He doesn't want to hear any of that stuff. You know, it just didn't compute. I don't want to see my father admired as some big, knowledgeable professor. No, it just doesn't work. So intimacy takes precedence over formality. Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. Yes, indeed, Govinda. That's marvelous. Yeah. Yes, it's the harvesting of the respiratory system, I'm afraid. and so on. So we had a question over here. Then I'll come back to you.
Thank you, Prabhu. You spoke about the gopis closing the eyes to capture the mood of the moment. But there is also the reality that exists in front of us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We have the emotions and we have the reality of the real world.
Yes.
But we do live in emotions. We are emotional animals. So the bhava is more important. I understand that part. But then what is the best or the prescribed way of creating the bridge between the emotions and the reality of the world where we exist at the moment?
So what is the relationship of the one's affective self in what is the relationship of that to the outer world?
Yeah. Right.
Well, I think Bhagavad Gita really responds to that. When Krishna asserts all of his I am, his famous I am statements, you know, of luminaries, I am the moon and the sun, the Virata Rupa. So this world is a mixed, very mixed place. Now, by and large, Prabhupada spoke most of the time pretty negatively about this world. This world is, it's just disappointing. You know, it's just a disappointment, right? And we can invoke the example of the, in the Upanishads, of the one bird. I like speaking about birds. I don't know why. It's just somehow natural for me. So one bird is sitting on the branch, and it's eating the fruit, the pipala fruit, and which is bittersweet. So this world is bittersweet. And the bird does not notice the other bird observing the bird. So Krishna is watching us. Krishna is present within our hearts while we're eating the bittersweet, you know, fruits of this world. But that's not a devotee. A devotee is drinking in the darshan of the supremely beautiful, supremely playful, and supremely delightful Lord. Those mirror the three principal deities of Vrindavan, right? Madan Mohan, supremely beautiful, the Lord that attracts us. Govinda, the playful Lord, the Lord that's very humorous, that's where humor comes from, playfulness, and supremely delightful, the Lord that is absolutely lovable. So, reading the Bhagavad Gita, we perceive that Lord who is supremely beautiful, playful, and delightful. We perceive that even in this world. Krishna trains us to see that. So we're very fortunate. But we know how things end in this world. You know, we're not unrealistic. People live their lives as if they're going to live forever, and that's because we are eternal. But they're mistaking the body for the self. We understand that death is a doorway. The bhakta leaves this world because the heart becomes so full of love that no longer can it be contained in a body. This is Mahaprabhu's example. It's so brimming over. It just, remember how Mahaprabhu's body is described in the CC? It becomes contorted because he could barely stay in a body. And that's symbolic of the way every bhakta ultimately becomes. I can't handle being in this body. My heart doesn't fit in this body anymore. I have to leave. So death is an entranceway to eternal and supernal happiness. A place where the heart can flow freely. So,
thank you, Prabhu.
So we're realistic. We're fortunate that way. Yeah, Archita? Did you want to? Yeah.
Part of the answer to the gopis' knowledge is that they heard, just like we're hearing. You know, Vrindavan is not separate from, let's say, even the rest of India. It's part of the Vedic culture. Mm-hmm. So they had brahmanas, they had, you know, yagyas, they had...
That's
so
true.
They heard.
Yeah.
They heard. And just like when Krishna was going to Mathura, they said, you know, the women of Mathura are not foolish like us. We're just simple, you know, village girls and you can fool us. But when you go there, you'll find they're very sophisticated. And how did they know that? By hearing.
Yeah.
They didn't actually go to Mathura. They heard. So they heard. They know of Krishna's Aishwarya situation by hearing. They heard from the brahmanas who perform yagyas. Why were they ostensibly following Karma Mimamsa, worshipping Indra, etc.? Because it was part of the culture.
Yeah.
They heard.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not that they were just, you know, born in a village somewhere and they knew nothing. They heard.
Uh-huh.
By hearing, they heard. They knew about Lord Narayan. They knew about yagyas. They knew about this. They knew about that. By hearing. Just like we're hearing. Many people in this room have never been to Vrindavan, but you have some idea because you've heard.
Nice. Nice. Well, you know what? Yeah, they heard, but they weren't terribly impressed. I mean, remember when Krishna and Balaram were hungry and they needed lunch and they went to the brahmanas performing the sacrifice and tried to explain, you know, by the way, fellas, the sacrifices are meant for us. You know that, right? And they just kept going on. Like typical, you know, male behavior, right? They just like, you know, they have to get the job done. We're here to fix it, you know, whatever. It's kind of so the brahmanas are just chanting along because they have to chant the mantras just perfectly. Don't bother us, Krishna and Balaram. We're here to chant the mantras perfectly. Wow. I mean, you've attained Krishna. Krishna's at your yajna, and you're rejecting them in favor of the mimamsa, right? The karma mimamsa, chanting of the mantras. So they had said, let's go to their wives, right? Oh, did they send someone? Oh, they sent someone. They didn't go. Okay. Well, I have to recall that. Okay. It's been a while. Yeah. But whether they went or whether they sent someone, I think it was explained to them that the offerings are really meant for the divine who's here. But they did not care. They cared more about their mantras, as Archita Prabhu is saying. But then they said, let's go to their wives. So the wives knew, you know, the gopis knew about, you know, the Aishwarya elements. But they, you know, just as long as Krishna Balaram are there, they don't care about the Aishwarya elements. But then they do remember them because they heard. I like that, Archita. Thank you. So I think we're, you know, well beyond our... Archita said, on Sunday, time is eternal. Well, you know what? Today it's not. Okay? So just... He's trouble, Swavas. I'm telling you, I'll never ask his advice on a Sunday feast, that's for sure. Thank you very much. It was great seeing you all. I'll be around all today. That's a threat. An offer. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. I think it was okay. Oh, wow. Whoa. Thank you. Wow. I'm not sure I deserve it, but I don't care. Yeah. That's great. Hey, we have to share this. Oh. No, we don't have to share it. So I can be greedy here.
That's right.
Oh, Sachinanda. What?
Coming from the
airport. Oh, this? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is this off?
Yeah. It's probably not. It's not. We'll move it. I'm going to go print it.
Oh, thanks.
I want to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Sentence to you. The pure self-realization, as we have several times discussed, is the pure